I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding, and I am your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have part two of our interview with Vince Taylor, and we had part one of our interview with Vince a couple weeks ago, and today we are going to have part two. And last week, of course, we did our interview with Sean Ray, where we talked about the Mr. Olympia that's coming up in only a couple more months. So that was an interesting interview, and I want to thank Sean for joining us on the show. But you're really going to enjoy the second part of our interview with Vince Taylor. Vince was a really great interview. And in this part of the interview, we pick up right after the 91 Olympia. So we start talking about the 92 Olympia, where Vince had that eye injury and he only placed sixth place. And then we get into talking about Vince competing in the 1990s. Where he ended up competing up against a whole new group of bodybuilders, all those great bodybuilders from the 1990s, including Kevin Lavroni and Flex Wheeler, Paul Dillette. So we talk about all his contests at the Arnold Classic and the Olympia. And then he also, Vince talks about the Masters Olympia that he won several times. I think he won it six times and all the backstage shenanigans that went on. So you're really going to enjoy this interview. Vince doesn't hold back at all. So those of you that enjoyed part one are really going to enjoy part two. So before we get to our Vince Taylor part two interview, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning Fat Burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. And I know we've gotten a lot of requests for more information on training and nutrition that the Old School Champs followed. I know a lot of times our interviews just sort of focus on the contest they entered and all their bodybuilding career and the people they've met, et cetera. And I try to get some of their training and nutrition information. But keeping in that vein, I wanted to read an article today after we get done with our Vince Taylor Part 2 interview. It's from the March 1978 issue of Iron Man magazine. And this was right after Frank Zane won his first Mr. Olympia. And Frank talks about how he won the Mr. Olympia, his Mr. Olympia contest. So it's really, really a good article. It's a little bit different than like the muscle builder articles. And Frank is very open and forthright about the kind of diet that he follows and the kind of training he followed. So it's not a very long article, but I thought you guys would enjoy it for those of you looking to get some information on the kind of nutrition and training that the guys from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s followed. So I'm going to read that, as I said, right after our Vince Taylor interview. All right, I got some comments from the Sean Ray interview that we did last week. So I want to read those for you. Pete Pingle said, I can't wait to hear this interview, John. I think Sean is awesome. He's never been afraid to speak his mind. I am psyched for the Mr. Olympia this year. As always, I'll be going to it again this year, and I hope to see you again. Yes, I got to meet him last year at the 2018 Mr. Olympia Expo. So I look forward to seeing you again, Pete. And Frankie Albert said, this should be an interesting conversation from a former uncrowned Mr. Olympia. And Bob Brown made the comment. He said, what a great interview. The two of you together provide a wealth of history and insight into the sport. Sean has always possessed charisma and excitement with in-your-face honesty. I'll listen to this one three times before the month is over. All right. Thank you for that comment. I also got an email from Ron Erickson, and he said, John, I wanted to let you know how much I look forward to enjoy your podcast. I believe I've listened to all of them, and I particularly love the guys from the 1970s and their stories of their time in Southern California and Gold's Gym. Living and growing up in the South Bay area of Los Angeles, I ran into many of your guests back in the day. Mike Mentzer riding his bike pre-contest on the beach bike path and having many of the guys coming into the nightclub I bounced in Redondo Beach. I was starstruck at the time, but they were always friendly and generous with their time. Ken Waller even invited me to sit down and have lunch after I ran into him in a Culver City hotel where he had a small gym. What a memory. I am 64 years old and I still live 4 to 5 days a week, and I teach 2 group cycling classes a week. Recently, I retired after 40 years in the health and fitness field. I think your interview and conversation with Ruth Silverman was outstanding, as she is a top-level journalist in our sport. Also, I enjoyed your interview with John Lloyd, as we were classmates at Long Beach State University, and we both worked part-time at St. Mary's Medical Center together. Keep up the great work. Best, Ron. Please feel to edit this as needed. No, I didn't edit it at all, Ron. Thank you very much for your email. That was great. That was cool that you were classmates with John Lloyd. I also got a letter from Stephen Cordetti, and he said, Mr. Hansen, I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed the lengthy interview you did with Porter Cottrell. We need more guys like him in the industry rather than the self-absorbed, conceited youngsters we see more and more. Yeah, Porter's a great guy. So thank you for your email, Stephen. And if you guys want to email me with any comments on any of the shows, not just this week's show, or any comments or any suggestions or whatever you want to do, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com and I will be happy to read your comments on the air. I also got some comments on the Apple Podcasts page, so I wanted to read some of these because I think some of these are kind of recent. This one is from Dude2, so obviously they use their screen names. He says, the subject matter, easy to listen to. Not only is John a professional in his field, but he acts like it. No matter which subject it is, you can tell in 5 minutes of discussion who knows their stuff and who doesn't. John knows his stuff, and his content is easy to listen to. Thank you for that comment. He gave us 5 stars. And this one's from Johnny. He says, excellent. If you are an old school bodybuilder or a young lifter, you will enjoy John's interviews with the greatest bodybuilders that ever lived. Thank you, John, for bringing to life the bodybuilders that were in the magazines from the 70s. He also gave us 5 stars. This one's from Abatis, I think it's called. It says, the best insight, John is great, and the interviews are legendary. This one's from Don Simon. He says, inspiration from the past. I struggled to find a podcast that is real and relevant to bodybuilding. This is just that for me. The way every bodybuilding legend tells their stories captivates my imagination. I'm learning about the history and the people I never knew existed in bodybuilding. I love the life stories and real down-to-earth conversation. Thank you, Don. That was a great review. And this last one is from Caitlin, and she says, informative and entertaining. John Hansen is an excellent host. He asks interesting, engaging questions. Allowing his guests time to fully answer and explain their experiences makes this show unique. I was not really interested in bodybuilding or its history, and I found this podcast by accident. I really learned a lot. One of my all-time favorites. Wow, that's great. And she also gave us 5 stars. So I think 5 stars is the highest you can give. So yeah, if you want to leave a comment on the Apple Podcast preview, I would appreciate that. I think that helps our ratings. All right. So what else is going on in your world, guys? The weather actually out here in Tampa is getting better. It's not as hot as it was last month. Been getting a lot of rain, of course, which is typical for the summer. And knock on wood, no hurricanes yet. So we're hoping we can get through the hurricane season without any major hurricanes again. I got some news this week. I have a small hernia that I've had probably since 2012. I think when I was training for that last Natural Universe win, I was real lean and I was squatting, and I think I just had a slight tear. So it's right in the middle of my abdominals. It's not one of those lower ones by the groin. So I have this great health insurance now because I'm working at the hospital doing that security work. So I went to the doctor, and we agreed to do the surgery. So he said it's pretty easy, you know, compared to a lot of them. They don't have to put mesh or anything in there. I guess they just make an incision and they close it up. The hard part is going to be I can't really train for a while. So I think for 4 weeks, he said, I really can't do anything more intense than just walking on a treadmill. And then the 4 weeks after that, I can train, but I have to go light. I have to be really careful. I probably can't do any squats or leg press or anything that's going to push on that abdominal wall. He said it's kind of misleading because it's going to feel like it's strong, but you have to give it time to really attach, I guess, and get stronger again. Like, I think it's the fascia. So I'm going to have to take a layoff, which really sucks because I'm so used to training and I've been training for 42 years. I usually don't take more than a week off. I think the longest I ever took off was I tore my bicep in 2000 and I had to have a cast on for 8 weeks. So I didn't do anything at all for 8 weeks. And I think it was even longer than that. I think it ended up being around 12 weeks because when I got the cast off, I was having a really hard problem getting my mobility back in my arm. So yeah, that was definitely the longest. I remember I lost all the calluses on my hand. And it was really a weird feeling because that was the only time in my life, either before that or since then, that I've ever taken that long off. So who knows, maybe it'll do my body good to give my body a break and just, I'm obviously going to shrink a little bit. I'll try not to get too fat, but I'll just rest all the joints and then I'm sure it'll come back quick. So I'll probably be back to good training again in the middle of October. But he even warned me when I come back to training after that 8 weeks, I can't go too heavy. I've got to sort of build up. So it'll be an experience, but it'll be good getting it fixed. You know, you got to get it fixed sooner or later. It's not going to go away, obviously. So it's always going to be there. And the last couple of times I've gotten real lean, you can see it. It's in the middle of my upper two abs. So it just needs to get fixed. So like I said, now that I got the insurance, why not do it now? And this coming week is the Tampa Pro out here in Tampa. So that's a big event. I believe it'll be, let's see, August 2nd, which is Friday, and then August 3rd, which is Saturday. So it's those 2 days. And I think they have the big press conference on Thursday night. So that's a huge event because Tim Gardner, the promoter, he's a friend of mine, and he's one of the biggest promoters for the IFBB and the NPC. And Tim does a lot of pro shows, but his one here in Tampa is the one he started with. So that's his biggest one. And it's one of the few contests that it has all the pro divisions. I think they even have fitness, which a lot of people don't have. And I think they might even have women's bodybuilding. He has every single division that's offered. And a lot of pro shows don't do that because the promoter has to pay for every contest they have, every division they have. They have to pay a separate sanction fee. So it gets really expensive for the promoters. But Tim has some great sponsors, so he's able to do that. So it's going to be a great show. And Powerhouse Gym, the athletic club where I train out here in Tampa, that's the official gym for all the competitors. So if any of the competitors want to work out, they're allowed to go to Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club and train for free. So I always see a lot of people coming into the gym. They probably start coming in around Wednesday. So that should be exciting. I'll let you guys know how that goes next week on the show, on our podcast next week. Keep your fingers crossed. I've got some good interviews supposedly this week. Tomorrow or Monday and Tuesday. So I'm not going to say nothing. I don't want to jinx it because every time I say I have an interview, it ends up not happening. So I will tell you guys next week when or if these interviews take place, but hopefully they will. It sounds like they're both pretty solid. So I'm supposed to do one tomorrow and one Tuesday, and I'll tell you guys next week who they are. And then next week we should have our second year anniversary, which will actually be second year in a month. Because it should have been the beginning of July, so it'll be the beginning of August instead. So I should have, that'll probably be a part two or two-part episode because we do have so many shows that I want to kind of highlight and go over. It's fun reviewing all those old shows because there was a lot of great moments in all the podcasts that we've done. I counted it up the other day. I think we've got over 100 podcasts now because it's been going for over 2 years. So thanks for all you guys out there who listen. And thanks to those who sponsor the show on our Patreon account. And if you're interested in doing that, even if you just want to give like $1 or $2 a month or whatever, just to help allay some of these expenses that we have, you can do that at the bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, which is the official website of this podcast. And in the upper right-hand corner, you see the Patreon link. And if you wanted to donate something each month, then I would appreciate that. If not, that's cool too, whatever you guys want to do. And being a movie guy, I want to mention I saw finally Quentin Tarantino's movie, which just opened last week. I went Thursday night with one of the very first showings. It was called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I really liked it. It was a different kind of Quentin Tarantino movie, much more quiet, not action-packed, not a lot of violence except for the ending. but I really liked it. I think I love Quentin Tarantino's movies, and he's now, I think he's my age. He's 56, so he's getting more mature, and he's getting into more character development. And this movie took place in 1969 in Hollywood, and Bruce Lee even has a part in it. There's a guy from, I think he was from Indiana, and he played this part of Bruce Lee, and they have a fight scene with him and Brad Pitt, who plays a stuntman. So that was really cool. That was fun to watch. But the guy looks just like Bruce Lee, and he sounds just like Bruce Lee. And, of course, it's all made up. This isn't an actual thing that happened with Bruce Lee. But I just read that book, Bruce Lee, A Life. I read it last year. It was a great book. I think I read it twice. And it goes into his whole biography. And they talk about that period when he was in Hollywood and he was trying to make it in the 60s. But because of the prejudice against Oriental people, he couldn't get a starring role in a TV show or a movie. So he was teaching a lot of the people. And one of the persons he taught was Jay Sebring, who was a hairstylist. And he also taught Sterling Siliphant, who was a top screenwriter, and Steve McQueen, one of the top Hollywood stars at that time. So Steve McQueen is in the movie. So Jay Sebring is in the movie. And he taught Sharon Tate how to fight for a movie called The Wrecking Crew with Dean Martin. And that movie has sort of a cameo in the movie because Sharon Tate goes into a movie theater to watch herself in The Wrecking Crew. So that's why Bruce Lee is seen in the movie, because he's coordinating fights, I guess, for a movie. And that's some of the stuff that he did, because he, since he couldn't get into the movies himself, a lot of his Hollywood friends got him to do as a stunt coordinator in a lot of the movies. So anyways, I really liked it, but I noticed reading like Rotten Tomatoes, it was very fractured. You either loved the movie or you hated it. People were saying it was the most boring movie they ever saw. It was a waste of time. They walked out of it. But I didn't feel that way at all, and I loved it. So if you're a Quentin Tarantino fan, I recommend it. So go to it and see what you think and see how you like it. All right. So before we get to our interview with Vince Taylor, part two of our interview, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation, and they'll also give you 20% off your first order. And if you don't live in Tampa, that's okay. They can work with you over the phone or even by Skype, and they will take care of you. So again, 813-922-8939, or their website, flalternativemeds.com. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with Vince Taylor, part two of our interview with Vince, where he talks about competing in the 90s and also competing in the Masters Olympia. And then right after we get done with our interview with Vince, I'm going to read that article by Frank Zane from the March 1978 issue of Iron Man magazine. Here we go. And then after that, I'm looking at your record here. It looks like you won the Grand Prix in Denmark, England, Finland, Italy, Spain, and Switzerland. So you cleaned up out there.
I cleaned it up. But let me tell you, I cleaned it up, because when you looked at it, the attitude was right. One is that when you come off a top three in Olympia, you beat a lot of guys. The best of these guys are going to come on tour. If they couldn't beat you this night, why should they beat you any other night?
Right.
So I wanted to stay sharp, stay focused, hit these shows, and learn how to prepare for every show. So I stayed to a student of my game, you know, how to keep my peak conditioned, what to eat, what not to eat, and learn these things. And I knocked those shows down with perfect scores.
Yeah.
Perfect scores. And Wayne was like, nobody's done that before, Vince. Then they had this little bonus. Well, Joe said that the person who wins the most on the tour, he would give him some extra money, and that must be me. Yeah, I'm winning this stuff. Do you think that ever materialized? No.
No.
But it didn't matter. I got those 8 wins. I won them in grand style. People loved my routines. I was getting much, much, much returns from most of these countries, man. You know, and that was the beauty of it. Opening doors like that.
Yeah.
And came more of off, not on stage competing, but off stage communicating.
Yeah.
And I was all around the world, man, jet setting. My career went from competing down and just, boom, hit the world stage for the next 13 years.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Then in 92, you go to the Ironman, you win that, and then you go to the Arnold Classic, and you win the Arnold Classic in 1992. You were
that was amazing. That was amazing. We looked at always who's competing. When I saw the competition list, it was like, oh, man, ain't too many high, you know, big value targets out here. My name is right among the tops.
Right.
So we can come in and bring what we just did on the tour and beat these same guys. And, hey, and that's what happened. You know, we dialed in at the Ironman, mm-hmm. won that. And then, of course, the Arnolds was like, you know, is this a possibility? And then when we got there, man, it was I came in good shape. I came in good shape. And yeah. then got that ultimate medal. It was just a perfect night. God, it was a perfect night.
Yeah, I was at that show, and I saw you win that. And I remember you were really, really happy the day after when you did the seminar. And Lee Haney joined you, right? Wasn't he there at the seminar with you?
Absolutely. See, yeah. I always kept that guy around, either by, you know, name and or presence.
Yeah.
Keep that company.
Now, did you feel your condition was even better at that Arnold than it was for the 91 Olympia?
Pretty much the same. I was a little bigger, number one, at Arnold's. But I think the condition quality didn't stray too much. So I was kind of comfortable on the look because I always knew I can get better. But that's a thing of process and time. And for that moment and that time, I was good. I was going to be as good as I could get because I don't think you can ever duplicate any physique that you bring out prior. I've kept all kind of records on what I've done and did everything, wrote it all down. Yeah. And that happens again.
Yeah, yeah.
And it happens again. So all these people who are doing that out there, you know, you might as well get writing that stuff down. It ain't going to be the same.
Right. And you did your Terminator routine there too again, right?
That was the beautiful part because I changed the song up.
Yeah.
I Believe I Can Fly. You know, R. Kelly, man. It's always about keeping the audience slightly off balance.
Yeah.
You know, and then you bring that Terminator out and Arnold just went berserk, you know. I remember seeing a replay after stage on TV and Arnold was commentating the whole show. And he said himself, this has to be the greatest posing exhibition I've seen in my whole history of bodybuilding.
Wow.
And he's that? Yeah. I got that on tape. I still got that on tape. But, you know, you won't find it online. That one show, you won't find.
Yeah, show, I never saw that.
You can't find my shows.
I'm right.
Like, is that all about? It's crazy. You know, you do this game for a certain reason, a little recognition, mm-hmm. and then you notice you're not getting it. You know, why can't I find Vince Taylor posing at this show? This is nothing.
Yeah.
I ever did anything else. And it was like things that make you go, hey, something wasn't going right inside the organization with Vince Taylor. I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
I'm not outspoken. I don't look for change. I try to go along with it. I'm not that squeaky wheel looking for that oil. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't change what you're doing. I change what I'm doing. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, so, but things weren't, I think it was a different opinion of me from the inside. I don't know why.
You don't know why?
Don't know it. Don't have a clue.
Hmm.
Found out with that next Arnold's, though. It became very, very interesting. Because I kind of had a call from, was it 90? I got second to LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a story for you. Because I knew that Kevin from the following, I had won the year before Flex had won. The Flex wasn't returning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, I got this. Then I heard LeBron had popped a pectoral muscle.
Mm-hmm.
I know I got this. How you going to beat me with a blown gasket? That's what I was always saying.
Right.
And a couple months before the show, I was guest posing in South Carolina, I believe it was, and one of the promoters had a problem with me not sitting at this table. Can't think of the guy's name right now. Florida, too. I can't think of his name. God, man. But I'm like, I'm in the event. You walk into the door. He has monitors over here behind the door. I'm not going to sit right beside these monitors blasting in my ear. I'm just going to sit adjacent, right across from them, at a table that's free. So I had the guy put a table over there, people walking through on both sides. And instead of coming to me and sitting at the Weider stand, he said that I refused to sit there. So Jim Mannion, I love Jim, he came up to me and said, Vince, something wrong? I said, no, Jimmy, what's going on? Motive all twisted that you won't sit at the booth. I said, Jimmy, I'm sitting right there. It would be like you turning around and touching that monitor behind me and you. I'm just not sitting with you. And he was like, I said, no, all I had to do was ask me. I was just saying it was so loud over there. He said, no, Vince. I said, okay, it's cool. So we left it at that. Shortly after that, I got a call from IFBB. Lynn Conkright was calling me about exhibitions or something. And I had made it a point as a business aspect of what I do to make sure that every exhibition I've ever done, I would get the promoter to sign off and say what type of job I did. If I disappointed that crowd or if I disappointed my responsibility of being there, I owe you one. And I'll come back and pose for you for free.
Okay.
That's where I put my thing down. I never had a complaint at any exhibition. When I did that Terminator routine, man, I had 12 opportunities or obligations under my contract to fulfill. And mine was soaked up right away. I was done within a month. People wanted me all around the world. Mm-hmm. So speed that bad boy up. I'm sitting at my breakfast table. It's about a month or so before the Arnold Classic, the second one. And I got a call from Joe. Now, mind you, I don't go to California. I have been out to that office. I don't think I've ever been to that office. Didn't like to go out there to do the photo shoots, but I went and did them anyway. I did the whole thing I was supposed to do. Joe called me that morning, and all I heard was, Vince Tyler, this is Joe Weider. I'm like, wow. And my wife be quiet, everything, my little son sitting at the table, eating breakfast, that's how early it was. I said, Joe, hi, how you doing? The first thing he said was, Vince, what am I paying you for? I said, okay. I said, what do you mean, Joe? You won't compete. You won't do your exhibitions. You won't do your photo shoots. He went down a list. So, Joe, do you know who you're talking to? This is Vince Taylor. I just did the Arnolds last year. I've just turned on my Terminator routine. I'm around the world. I did a photo shoot at your home 2 weeks ago with Benazita and Berto Fox. So what are you talking about? He was going on, I don't know. Somebody said, Joe, somebody's telling you the wrong crap. If you like, I will send to you a stack of letters that I get signed after every exhibition I do. Right. Let you know where I've done and how I did. I don't understand. I said, Joe, I don't know what that's all about. So he hung up the phone. About a day later, Wayne D'Amelio calls me. He said, Vince, what's going on? I said, Wayne, how you doing, man? He said, Joe called me, man. I said, yeah, I heard. You know, he's kind of upset. You won't do your photo shoots. What photo shoots is that? And I told Wayne, I'm done. You should know that. He said, they want you to fly out to L.A. and do a photo shoot. I said, the Arnolds is 13 days away. I'm not flying out to L.A. and do nothing to upset my preparation.
Right.
It's, you suppose, I said, why don't we just do what we always do? We shoot photos after it's back to stage when it's over. But you know, Vince, Joe loves his photos. I said, I get it, but I got to get my contract right because I want more money this time. You see, I got my contract with him. I won last year or year before. I want to get this thing. So, well, you got to sign your contract. I said, I'm not signing no contract. I'm going to win, and then I'll sign the contract. I'm going to ask for more money. That's my plan. He said, well, I don't know, Vince. I wouldn't do that if I was you. I said, why not? And he said to me, he said, you know if the show is close, understand this, if the show is close and they got to go here or there, and it's down to one or two points, the judges will easily go to the guy on contract. So if you're not on contract, man, So I asked myself and him, I said, well, how do the judges know I'm on contract anyway? What's that got to do with anything?
Right.
Well, I'm just telling you, Vince, it's not a good move. I think you should think of it. I said, nah, I'll tell you what. I'll take my bets, my hedges on this one because I plan on winning this thing and I'll see what happens. Okay, Vince. And that's the last conversation we had. So we're at the Arnolds. We come out. I don't know if you were there or not. I thought I looked damn good.
Yeah.
People were like, man, Vince looks fantastic. This is two in a row. You're going to win this thing tonight. And I'm backstage going like, man, it ain't over until the fat lady sinks.
Right.
So I'm cool with this. Now, the year before, or 2 years before, I won the first one at the Ironman. I can't think of this kid's name. He used to expedite backstage with all the time. His father was a judge or whatever, black guy. I ain't saying no names. But he would come up to all the winners. Hey, champ, how you doing? He'd be like, what? What's up? He knows. He ain't got to work.
Yeah.
We saw him the angel. So we cool. So he came up to me in L.A., same thing. Came up to me at the Arnolds when I won it, same thing. Okay? So we come back to the last L.A. show, same thing. Now, at the Arnolds, after the prejudging, we go back to the hotel. And as I'm leaving the prejudging, I got everybody around me shaking my hand. Vince, you got this, man. This is perfect. I'm like, man, don't jinx me, man. I seen, we'll see what happens like that. I left it that way. We got back to the hotel, and the damnedest thing happened, man. My phone never rang once. I'm thinking, this is not normal. I'm going to win this show. If I go back a year ago, my phone was blowing up off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
My phone wasn't ringing at all. So my buddy was down from Carolina, and we were going to the sauna, which is something I always did between prejudging and night show. So we walked out to the sauna, and I ran into four judges coming down the hallway. And they looked at me, and the first thing I says, looks like it's two in a row, baby. I said, I hear you, like that. But it ain't over until the fat lady sings. Kept on walking. We get back. We get ready to leave to the venue. I'm on the bus out front. Nobody's on there but one competitor. So the angel, he comes in, looks down the bus. He ain't saying nothing. Vince, did you see so-and-so? I said, nah, man. I'm waiting for the
agent. Yeah.
He said anything. Got back off. I looked at my wife. She's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
We went to the event. I'm sitting there. I'll go back to the workout room all the time. Get back there, sit around, start warming up much earlier than anybody else. I'm back there by myself. He comes in the far door back there and screams across the whole place. Did you see so-and-so? I said, nah, ain't nobody here but me. Oh, okay. He ain't say nothing again.
Right.
Said, this stinks. You know, this really stinks. So I'm standing there. We get in line. They go on stage. He comes up behind me, walks in front of the line. He's looking. He comes to me and says, man, it sucks. The politics. They got you in second place. I'm like, oh, okay. He said, man, you got to pose tonight, man. You got to pose. I'm going, like, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
That. So we're back there warming up. Leverone is lying on the floor, and he's been like that the whole day because I think Kevin knew in his heart he was getting dusted. He wasn't part of the whole activities at all. He's just laying on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a scenario. Backstage behind that curtain, they go to wind that curtain up. It's about a four-foot square space back there, which is kind of covered up by a screen, by a curtain.
Right.
And about 10 feet is the exit to go on stage. Kevin is laying right there in front of this curtain. I happen to be behind the curtain, standing behind the curtain looking. And I'm watching Kevin just lay there. He's laying there. People walking around. He's stepping around. He's just laying on his back. So I look down, and here comes Wayne DeMille. Pops around the corner. And I can't remember the guy who will Wayne. So Kevin leans down on his chest, does this to him on the chest, and Kevin's eyes pop wide open. Like, I'm looking and going like, oh, no. I'm tough to notice that he won. Kevin rolls up like the second coming. I'm like, wow. Okay. So I'm standing behind this curtain, and they're standing in front of me. And then somebody says, where's Vince Taylor? Arnold wants Vince to have that trophy. Now, remind you, the first Most Muscular Trophy presentation at the Arnold's was given to me. Hmm. When they put that thing to the athletes meeting, we first saw it. They unveiled it. They were talking about it, what it represents. Arnold's going to have given it to that one particular most muscular guy. Right. I got Nasser El-Sombody sitting beside me and Paul Dillett and Fuchs and everybody. I'm like, I ain't going to never get no trophy like that. Not with these ass monsters I'm sitting with. And I just laughed it off.
Right.
Speed forward. Arnold wanted me to have that trophy. And that's what I was the one presented that winning that muscularity round. Which I did not win. I didn't see it on the scorecards. I didn't win it. I got that trophy, though.
Hmm.
Go figure, right? And we went out there, and we posed down, man. I finished posing. That place went berserk. And the guy came backstage. The guy said, man, Vince, screaming, you did it, man. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was the nail in the coffin. I said, I don't know, man. And then over to the fat lady singing. And I walked through. I said, but I think she just sang. Like that. So we just started laughing. I was feeling pretty good. So we went out. They called us all out. We lined up. And I knew what I saw. But deep inside, I was hoping, don't let it be that. So when Lonnie Teeper got there, who's it going to be? Kevin Leverone or Vince Taylor? If you ever watch that replay again, you'll see me standing there waiting. And as soon as he said Kevin Leverone, I was like,
yeah.
Because I was putting to the end that it would go that way.
Yeah.
And then after it was all over, Kevin got the nod. My wife wanted to see the scorecard. Wayne finally came up with the scorecard. She went through the numbers because she's a numbers girl. She's going up and down those numbers. She said, mathematically, this cannot even happen. The number ratio cannot even be correct.
Hmm.
You lost by a half a point. And then it just came right back to me. It's like, what did that man say to me when he told me I needed to do them photo shoots? Because if it was close like that and it's a point or two and they're going to go to the guy on contract. And if you're not on contract, Vince, which I wasn't.
Yeah.
Easily go and booyah.
Hmm.
Wow. That was my experience there. I was ticked because I won that show.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I thought I, you know, but that's how they do me, man. that's the game.
Let's go back to the 92 Olympia, Vince. We skipped that one. That was the one that Dorian won his first one. It was held in Helsinki, Finland. And you had to think that it was going to be between you and Dorian because you guys were second and third the year before. So tell us about what happened with that. I know you had that accident on the bus.
Yeah, that was hurricane season time here. You know, we just went through that hurricane and trying to get things adjusted. You know, training was thrown off slightly,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it wasn't going to be thrown off enough that it was going to be interfering with what I was doing. The package I was bringing was the package I could only bring. But we got to Helsinki. We traveled over there, man. We got off the plane, got on the got our luggage and stuff, got on the bus, and was headed to the hotel. And as soon as we got there, I reached up into the compartment and pulled the bags down, and the strap from my shoulder bag flipped down and just smacked me straight in the eye, which scratched my surface of my elbow. And boy, that was a painful thing. It hit me like somebody hit me with a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the hospital, and the doctor was trying to tell me, you know, what much he could do. And the first – I must have sat there in that chair from the time we arrived for about 5 hours. And this thing was painful like hell. You couldn't blink because the eyelid would cover the area that was scratched. And so we called the doctor first. That's what we did. He came about – we got there at 4. He must have came about 10, 11 at night. And for that whole time, I was sitting in the chair holding my eye open like that because it was killing me.
Wow.
And he gave me some kind of Vaseline stuff to put in my eye. And he's kind of – some whatever it was. Didn't work. Felt like an eye full of goo. And he left, you know, and I'm trying to lay down, sit down. Couldn't lay down, sit back in that chair again the whole night. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like – it was the worst thing in the world because I put more goop in my eye. It wasn't taking the pain away.
Yeah.
And the eye batted. It was just like, bam, stabbing you in the eye. So we're trying to get ready for the couple of days, get ready for the main event, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, couldn't eat, couldn't do anything, couldn't train. So then my wife went out and she found a doctor, and he came over and he gave me some drops. And he's kind of Novocaine drops. He said, you can only use these 3 times, you know, just put them in. And mind you, from the time that this thing happened, 24, 36 hours later, I'm like a basket case.
Yeah.
He gave me drops, and it just cooled that sensation away. I was like, oh, my God. I can finally get some relief from this thing. And he said it's going to last for an hour. And let me tell you, he was not joking. That shit lasted for 59 minutes, okay?
Wow.
59 minutes is a few seconds. Here comes that pain again, right? And it caught me because I had gone out to get to the gym. I said, we got to do something. We got to start trying to, you know, get ready for the Saturday. Man, I put them drops in, and we went up to the corner, got to that little gym. I got on that treadmill and started just riding a little bit, you know. And man, that must have been 59 seconds going by very quickly because, boom, it hit me when I was on that bike. And I fell off that bike going, oh, my God.
Wow.
Now, I got them drops again. I put them back in, stopped it for a minute. And the wife is telling me, you can't use them anymore. You really? I'm going to use them until it's gone. And so I did that about 3 times, and then later on that evening, again, about 9 o'clock, it came back. So now I'm out, no more. Called the doctor. He's telling me he can't give me anything else. Came back, gave me some more of that goop again. So now it's Friday. It's time to get on stage, you know, pre-judging time. So we went over to the gym again, put that goop in my eye. So on the way back, we stopped at the pharmacy, you know, because I was going to use my glasses. So I could just put – because, listen, I'm leaving the doctor's office. I got this big white patch on my eye, this big old white tape. Come back to the lobby. Jimmy's like, what is wrong with you? I said, well, I've been sitting in this room for 2 days and nobody checked on you, you know. But this – you know, I got my eye busted up. So now are you going to be okay? So I guess I can compete. So I'm telling Wayne I can't go out there with this white thing on my face, nor can I take it off. So can I put the gauze on my eye, trim it around, and then wear my sunglasses? No, Vince, you can't use any props. Say no prop. I can't see, you know. So what I wound up doing was coming back from the gym after that little Novocaine drop. We stopped at the pharmacy, got a patch. And as I put the patch on my eye, even the pressure from the patch kind of pushed against my eyelids. And that would push it to the eye. It was like, man, that wasn't working. So padded the patch up to keep it away from the eye. So I had something to cover the eye because I had to keep it closed. I mean, all of a sudden, you walk around with one eye. You got to go and do the things we had to do. It was a nightmare.
Hmm.
So 2.5 days, I'm sitting up in the chair, couldn't do anything. I couldn't even prepare. You know. So we went over to the event. Then you had to climb up on these high freaking stairs. I'm like, they really trying to put a stake in my back. But we got through that. But it was the worst time of my life. People are like, man, that was a great prop for your Terminator. dude, when I went back to the doctors after the show, the first thing he said to me, he said, listen, where are you headed now? I said, well, I got a couple more events to do. He said, you need to go back to America and get your eye attended to. You're going to create an infection. You'll probably go blind.
Yeah.
It was over. We got on the first train going back to Berlin.
Yeah.
Train going back. And it was going back smoking, too. So when I got back to Berlin, which was a very interesting, I told you before, it was a very interesting trip because I'm on that train coming back from Finland to Berlin and going through all these small towns. It was exactly like that storybook that I had heard in fourth grade or elementary school during lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
That story about these kids coming back from Berlin on that train and the guards on the train looking for passports. They thought they had to jump off. And as they were going through every one of the towns, you could see the name of the town light up as the train would go through. You hear the wheels and everything. Mm-hmm. It was so dramatic, and it was so exactly like that story. My wife and I was in the train, the sleeping car. I was on the top bunk by the window, and that's exactly the view I had. You know, watching us coming through these little towns, seeing the light up. It was so surreal.
Yeah,
I will never forget that. But that's I had to tell you that because that kind of came right back to me.
Yeah,
but that happened in Helsinki. You know, it was the worst time of my life. Man, I wish that on nobody. And of course, Benaziza went out, you know, the next show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What did you think about what some of the competitors were saying about you after the show? You know, like, oh, he had a scratch on his eye, and he's making that as an excuse of why he couldn't be in good shape, you know?
Absolutely. And that you can't control, you know, because they're going to say something. They did not know what I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know what my wife and I was doing. I only took that as, that's okay. You know, take your shots.
Yeah.
He goes, healthy, I'll see you behind back on stage.
Mm-hmm.
For those who was popping off, oh, they got popped on again because I put it right back on them.
Right. So then we go to 93 and you go into the Ironman and the Arnold. And this is the year that Flex comes out. And he's the big new amateur turning into a pro. And he had a lot of hype behind him. And he was pretty amazing that year, wasn't he?
He was fantastic. I saw Flex at the guest posing down in New Orleans. Whew. And I was like, wow. I don't know if he won it. He got second in his class or something he was preparing for.
Uh-huh.
But he came back. Man, Flex, when he popped out there, it was amazing. Yeah. That was the best physique I ever saw.
Yeah.
Man, you're not going to be winning too many more shows with this guy coming around.
Yeah.
You know? Flex was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I got to give it to boy Flex, though. He deserved that. Oof.
Yeah, I remember in 93, it was him and Paul Dillette were both going into the Arnold. And I remember some of the seasoned pros, like even Mike Ashton, was like, what the hell is this? You know, who are these freaks coming out of nowhere?
Paul was looking dangerous in 93, man. He was so shredded that one show.
Yeah.
And that's the show he cramped up on stage, wasn't it?
No, I think that was a couple years later.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
That show he looked great, but maybe before. That's
much. So you get third behind Flex and Lee Labrada.
Yep, and that was only to show how the competition was growing. That's your wake up call.
Yeah,
you know, it defined what I was doing. It gave me a chance to see. You know, it kept me grounded because once again, I wasn't out to win these shows. You know, I was out to compete, but then being realistic about it. In reality, you would just check in. You know, hey, here's somebody you got to beat.
Yeah,
you know, and you. That was the question: are you out here to beat him, or are you out here to continue doing what you're doing?
Right.
It's like, nothing for. I'm out here to continue doing what I'm doing. If I happen to beat you, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. If not, I ain't going to die about it.
Well, you did win the San Jose that year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I put it on him. You know, did Flex show up? I only think Flex showed up for that. And he was from that area, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think he showed up there.
No, you beat J.J. Marsh and Occam Albright, Ray McNeil.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And they thought they should have won. You know, it's amazing how people think they should win. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, look at your track record. How you going to beat me tonight if you couldn't beat me before?
Right.
But everybody's getting cheated on. But, you know, everybody uses that line. I've used it a few times, too.
And you skipped the Olympia that year, huh, Vince?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a lot. I had some knee problems, I think, something going on. I didn't do too many Olympias in my career. That's one thing people don't realize.
Yeah.
You know, did a few. That was it. Right where I started thinking that I was getting ready to develop into a bodybuilder of stature, I started looking, you know, I don't need to do this show. You know, I don't know if I hurt my shoulder or my tricep or was my knee. I believe it was my knee. And I got a scope, I think it was, and missed it. But it wasn't about that Olympia because, once again, I'm good enough to be there. But you're not going to beat the guy who's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about money. It's one of the money-making shows.
Yeah.
Where can you make the money?
Right, right.
So didn't have a problem with that.
So we talked about 94. You won the Ironman, but then you got second to Lavroni. Yeah. Do you think Lavroni was just off that year because of the pec tear?
Because of the pec tear, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He couldn't train the way he wanted to. He was making a comeback move, and you just didn't have it. You know, you lost a lot of time training. Now, he's a hell of an athlete. I mean, a hell of a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Health. When he came out, shoot, Lavroni, I was like, damn, here comes another one.
Yeah.
And these guys are dropping out the woodworks. Some right. cannonball shoulders and, you know, I mean, really good bodies, you know.
Yeah.
But if there is a flaw in the design, hey, you just got bad luck like everybody else.
Right.
So brought that physique with that sunken chest on the you done. You know, just from the optics, you can't. Your symmetry's gone now.
Right.
Man. The rest is history, you know?
Yeah. So then we go to 95, and you go to the Night of the Champions, and you get second to another masked guy, Nasser El-Sombati, who really, really stepped up his game that year. And that was the year he really came in big.
Yeah. Because I was beating Nasser in Germany all the time,
yeah.
you know, prior to that. Because Nasser was big, but he wasn't that big. Okay, and he came back, man, he was monstrous looking.
Yeah.
And I was like, good Lord, you know. So, again, you got to step aside and let these guys have their due.
Right.
There wasn't nothing I was concerned about with Nasser because Nasser had turned it up.
Yeah.
Prior to, he wasn't there. You know, it was almost like Ronnie. You
right,
know?
Right.
He wasn't there. But when Pop goes the weasel, when it pops. No, Nasser looked really good. He started running. After that, he was on his run.
Yeah.
So you knew you had to take second place to him again. And somebody else is just one step ahead of you.
Right.
Because I refuse to think that I could adjust my physique to catch these guys that are obviously now being awarded, not because of their quality of the physique, but now they have that tremendous size. And Vince Taylor at 280 wasn't going to happen.
Right, you know, right.
Stay in my lane.
Yeah. Well, you did go to the Olympia that year, and you looked great. Now, you got fifth place that year. That was 95. How old were you that year, Vince?
Oh, I got to do the math. I don't have my little calculator in front of me right now. Well, look, we well up there now. We touch it. We getting close to 40, you know. So
yeah.
And I thought that was good because that's that year I tried to put on some size anyway.
Right.
I came back on stage bigger than I was probably ever before. But at the same time, once again, you can put that size on, but it has to, like I said, is it soup yet? You know, you stir it until it gets soup. And it wasn't soup yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was transformation I made, but it got my size up, but it wasn't the quality. But I did manage to get fifth, but that was sixth, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I thought that year Nasser should have beat Dorian.
Yeah.
We're standing on stage. I'm arguing with Nasser because he's a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling Nasser, jump on him. Get on him right now. You know, you're over here all scared. I'm like, dude, don't you want this? You yeah. got him.
Yeah.
He would go on stage and he'd just wither. He wouldn't go after it. You know, he wouldn't hit his shots. And he came back in the lineup. And I was literally, I was in his ear. Because he's a friend. I was like, man, come on. Don't throw this away.
Yeah.
You got him. But he just didn't want to show. He didn't have the attitude, man. He didn't show the confidence.
Yeah.
God, that was sad. Pissed me off, too.
And then you did really well at the Grand Prix shows again. You got the you won the England, France, and Ukraine. And, oh, you also won the Niagara Falls that year, too.
That's it. Because they counted me out again. You see, they see what I do, and they start thinking, well, he's not going to do this. I adjusted, got serious again, and got my act together and just started knocking it out.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I was just trying to get the best out of the physique now, because now that it had gotten the size that I needed, now that I had to bring it down, chisel it up, presenting a better package, and got rewarded for it. So I was pleased with those runs.
Yeah, you beat Lavroni in one of them.
Oh, yeah, in England. Tore his behind up.
Yeah, in England.
Man, all these shows I was doing, standing ovations everywhere behind the posing, because that was my highlight. I'm going to do the Grand Prix so I can make me some money.
Mm-hmm.
It got challenging when I got better competition, but I'm going to do the Grand Prix because I'm going to offer posing exhibitions afterwards. So I'm putting my schedule together. That was one of my main things for doing all these shows, make money when I'm not in season. But we had a great run there. I tore Kevin up, went to these other shows, and just kind of lived it. You know, I was feeling really good. But now I'm thinking, now I'm getting older. Now I'm thinking, you know, you're not going to be able to outrun these guys too much longer.
Yeah.
Because these guys will be back in shape. When they're doing what they're doing, you got Flex, you got Leverone, Nasser now. So now you're going to be fading back. So now it's time putting your eyesight toward those masters.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was looking at.
So they came up with that in 96. Well, actually, they started a little earlier when Louis and Robbie was going in it. But in 96, I think it was held with the Mr. Olympia, right, in Chicago? Yeah.
Absolutely. Nightmare. You know, because that was me saying, again, conversation with Wayne D'Amelio.
Uh-huh.
I'm turning 40 now, you know, and I want to be able to do the Masters and the Open, Mr. Olympia. And wasn't a problem with that. Out of the blue, he calls me and tells me, you can't do it. I'm like, excuse me? No, you can't do it. I said, why not? He said, because Canada doesn't want to see the same guy twice on stage in one night.
Canada.
I said, okay. So what you're telling me is that Sonny Schmidt could compete both. Louis could compete both, or Robbie could compete both. But now that I'm 40, I can't. Yeah, you got to choose. You have to choose. I'm like, well, I'll be. Okay, fine. I'll just do the Masters. That's when I stopped doing the Open Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you sure you want to do that, Vince? I said, well, yeah, because I feel that I'll take my little talent. I'm getting older, you know, and I think if they got this new division up, my goal is to win 8. No, I want 9 Sandals. Because Lee got 8. Okay, and I want to match Lee plus one, so I want to be Masters Mr. Olympia, and I want to win this thing for 10 years. So I said, now you do the math. I'm top 5 in the world right now at 40. The rest of these guys are so much younger than me. By the time they move up to be 40, I'll be 50. And I've won 10 of these. So that's my goal. I'm going for the Masters. And that caused a ruckus.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Man, number one, after 94 Arnold's, I got no coverage in the magazines no more. Okay, that's number one. So then when they told me I couldn't do both events, I also won the Arnold's, only Arnold Invitational Masters event.
Right.
That showed the year before, I told Arnold in the meeting at the athletes, said, listen, if you were to do the Masters, Arnold, and I remember the judges in there, some of them in there laughing. Oh, Vince, if you did a Masters, I can compete. Arnold walks in. I asked Arnold. I said, Arnold, what do you think about having a Masters? That's a fantastic idea, Vince. Let's do it. The whole room shut up. Okay, it was a joke 5 minutes ago. The whole room shut up. I said, Arnold, can I compete in the Masters and the Open if you do it? Absolutely, Vince. Love to have you. I looked at Wayne. Now. But now you're telling me I can't do both?
Right.
He's telling me I can. I took third in that show in the Open and won the Masters that night.
Yeah.
So that was the role of things. But did the coverage come out? Okay.
Wow.
So after that 94, I did not get a contract from Weider anymore. Okay. Did not get a contract. Cybergenics picked me up, a new version of Cybergenics. I made double the money from those people that I got from Weider, so they couldn't push me out. I felt they were trying to just, you know, hey, they control you. If they're not paying you any money from the contract side, you can't make it.
Yeah.
Okay. So they came in, offered me double the money I was making, so that was great. So people were getting pissed when they heard Vince was making $100,000. So I did that for that year, and then I ran into Pinnacle. Matched that, and I stuck with those guys for 7 years, 6 years. So that portion was great. I was surviving, making the money, and still doing my Masters and winning. But what was happening? You're winning the Masters. There's no coverage. You're not getting any articles in the magazines. I mean, they really just got rid of me. It's like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Why? But you can't stop me from winning.
Right. So how many years did you win the Masters Olympia events?
Five of them. Five in a row.
Wow.
And the story behind that is when I won the first one, which was so depressing as well. You know, this very one, this is the first one I won back here.
Uh-huh.
The other four are downstairs on my mantle.
Uh-huh.
I won that one. And that was my whole goal, because I told everybody, I'm here to win my Eugene Sandals for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So at that event, I knew I was going to win. I didn't train for the Masters. I felt they could not beat me. These are Masters. I know the names and the credits. I'm top 5 in the world.
Right.
How you beat me? I don't even have to train for you guys,
right,
which I did. I trained a little bit, died a little bit, and I came and I won.
Yeah.
Wasn't nothing against them, but I just knew I didn't have that much. So my thing was win Sandals. I won the stage, very first one. I walk on the booth. Wayne's up there, and he's talking. And I look behind Wayne. I see these two Sandals in the box, you know. And I know I won that night, so this is presentation night. So we go on stage, and they're calling it out. If you ever get a chance to watch the video, he's calling it out. Vince Taylor, the winner, you know, blah, blah, blah. He wins the gold medallion, Joe Wheeler's gold medallion, and blah, 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 blah. Joe comes out with the medal, and I'm standing there. Here comes Wayne, and shaking my hand and raising my hand up and everything. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm waiting. Where's my Eugene? You know, where is the Sandow?
Yeah.
Thank you, Vince. Thank you very much.
Hmm.
What? So we walk on off stage. I walk to the podium with Wayne. I said, what's up? He said, oh, we forgot the trophy. It's in my room. You can come get it after the show. I'm like, what? And I walked by and saw both of them sitting in the box behind him.
Hmm.
Man, that was the start of things to come.
Hmm.
I was, wow. So the second year, they did it again. You know, I brought my trophy because my wife went and got the trophy. Okay, we went out today. She came back in there and got the trophy. You know, but they didn't want to present it to me on stage.
Why is that?
I have no idea.
Hmm.
Not only that time, the second time we won, you know, I got it. And for a backup, I brought my own. I said, you ain't going to do it to me this time. I'm going to win, but you ain't going to do it to me this time.
Right.
But I got it on stage, and I'm happy, Jay. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Then they dropped it. They dropped the Masters Olympia.
Right.
And Tana picks it up. So she calls me. She says, Vince, would you do the show? Would you do the show? I said, yes, I will. On one condition. We have my Sandow. I swear we have it, Vince. I swear. So, okay, then I'll do the show.
Uh-huh.
So she marketed the show. I went down there, and I won that show. Stood on that stage, waiting for that Sandow. Wayne comes out to me. Brings me out that little white trophy back there, silver one, hands it to me. We forgot the trophy, Vince. We'll send it to you in the mail.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Okay. Took my little happy butt off stage, told my wife, and he's like, are you serious? Yeah. They forgot to bring it. You're going to have the Masters Mr. Olympia, and you're not going to bother bringing the trophy? Okay, cool. Heavyweight championship fight. They never bring the belt to the fight.
Right.
What? Who does that? Okay, you did it to me on the first Olympia. The second one I brought my own, but you gave me that. This one, you're going to send it to me in my mail. The very next year, win the show. It's over. Come down, shake my hand, look me in the face. We forgot it, Vince. We'll send it to you. UPS. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Why is this happening? Why was this happening?
Right.
Not covering the event on magazines. The fourth one, you're telling me that you got this guy who's going to beat me. That was Patrick Nichols. Not Nichols. Some guy in New York. I can't think of his name right now. I heard it through the grapevine. Had one of my friends call me, bodybuilder, said, Vince, man, you better be careful, man. They're talking to this guy. What's his name? From New York. I think he had some kind of medical condition, a coma or something like that later. He never got a chance to compete afterwards. But he was turning 40, so they say. And I saw it in a magazine. Which one was that? In Canada, Muscle Mag. They had an article on him. They were talking about him doing this, doing that. Page 31, he was 38 years old. Page 41, he was 40 years old. Like, which is it?
Right.
And Wayne talking about this guy was good, and he's going to be at the Masters. He had a quote that he was going to show me how a Masters champion is going to look. Whatever. I kept saying, bring it. Bring your Twinkies, because it's going to be a long day. That's all right. I can tell you. So they pushed that story the whole year, right? Got to the event, the guy never shows up. Couldn't find his birth certificate. So I win the show. Then they come up with this Youngblood guy.
Yeah, Don Youngblood.
That was number five. Now I'm down there in Atlanta, in Virginia, right? I'm down there waiting for this thing. I'm walking into the room like I always do. There's no competition here for me. I'm training for this a little bit anyhow. So I come in. And business as usual. I'm out here. After the prejudging, I get a call from one of my friends saying, man, this is close. I said, close what? Close with who? They got you close to that guy, a Youngblood guy. I said, guy with no legs and a fat, no abs? Yeah, man. I said, get out of here. And sure enough, I was losing.
Wow.
I was losing. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So, at the show, I went over there. Me and Robbie was on stage. We were talking. And he said, man, you don't let him go with that. Kick that ass like that. Mm-hmm. So we're doing our thing. And I beat him by 1 point.
You beat him by 1 point.
I beat this guy by 1 point. This old man who had – I see what you're doing. Year before, you want to take me out with this guy who never showed up. Now you're trying to take me out with this guy because you're tired of me winning.
Right.
I said 10 years, this is 5 coming up, so you don't want me to win this thing. This is my 5th win next year.
Right.
All right, so the following year, on my 6th win, back to the same thing, same guy. We doing this thing, man, and I'm beating these clowns like a baseball bat, okay? And all of a sudden, I hear the same thing. I had a really good friend of mine. She came to my room. She said, Vince, you got to pose tonight because if you don't, it's going to stink from here back to Texas. I said, what are you talking about? She said, they got you in second. To who? Deja Vu. That same guy last year. I said, oh, my God. They couldn't try it again. They couldn't do it this time. We played that thing off to the tee. I go over to the nice show. My brother's there. And luckily, he was outside in his car playing some music. He had some old songs he used to like to listen to. It's raining outside. So I come over, and they tell me my cassette won't work. It worked all day. Why didn't it work now?
Right.
Everybody else says work, but mine won't play. I said, get out of here. I'm in line. I'm lining up. I'm number 4 to pose. They come tell me your cassette won't play. I said, get out of here. So I get out of line. I go outside. I ask my brother. He said he had a set churled in and This World Was Mine.
Yeah.
Same one that I told you about John opposed to.
Yeah.
So he had that. That's a cassette. That's not a made doable, right?
Right.
He gave me the cassette. I ran inside. I'm outside practicing some, trying to think of what I did in 89.
Right. Okay?
So I come on stage. Oh, get ready to come on stage. I give him my cassette. I come out. I'm standing there. The cassette won't work. I said, there's nothing wrong with the cassette. My brother's like, track 2. You hear him screaming in the back. Put on track 2. It won't play. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Leave it alone, right? I said, well, just play anything. So they put something on. And I busted a couple of notes on something. And it came out pretty decent. I'm not going to say it was the greatest, but it was okay.
Right.
Long story short, I lost that show by 1 point. Lost the posing round. That's what took me out of my last match.
Lost the posing round.
Wow. Vince Taylor loses the posing round.
Unbelievable.
The only thing I can do, and I said after that, I'm done.
Yeah.
I stopped competing. I said, I can't beat City Hall, man. When they come at you with that pen and pencil.
Oh, man.
So I was done.
Wow. Now, didn't you do the Olympia or another, let me see. Yeah, you did the Olympia in 06, right? You got 11th?
Yeah, that was a shocker. That was a comeback.
Yeah.
That's 4 years later, man. I shut the game. I shut the engines off, and that was done.
Yeah.
I started thinking, man, I just turned 50. I said,
wow.
Try this again. I said, because you didn't go out the way you wanted to. You
yeah.
went out because they pissed you off.
Right.
But there's maybe a little bit left. So I went to Australia. I went as far away as I could to compete again just to see if I still had it, if I still remembered the rules, you know, the ABCs. And all kind of little stupid things were happening over there from the promoter, Graham or whatever his name was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got on stage, you know, there was no doubt in my mind. I won that show. And people were tripping. Got third.
Mm.
You know, it was like, oh, man, some things never change. But the buzz from that hit Pro Muscle Bodybuilding.
Yeah, Pro Bodybuilding.
And Chicarello and everybody was talking about that. Did you see Vince Taylor? This guy is top 5 in Olympia right now. That was the buzz.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, my stuff was coming around like that. So I was happy with that. And then made a mistake. Started talking to Wayne D'Amelio.
Mm.
Okay. He's doing this PDI new federation.
Right, right.
I said, I think I am going to wrap up my bodybuilding career after this, and I'll probably go and join another federation, maybe NABA, whatever he's doing, because business-wise, it makes sense. I can take this physique over there and make money and be on the ground floor of a new organization and kind of like make some money, be involved. Right here, my career is over. I'm ready to move on. That's it. And that's what I was thinking. So I told Wayne tentatively that when I finish this year of competing, I will probably come over and do the PDI. You sure, Vince? Can I send you a contract? You can send it. I'm not going to sign anything yet, but I'm telling you now, I'm definitely going to come over. So he wanted to promote the PDI Night of the Champions again. And when my name came up about joining the PDI after I finished bodybuilding, man, Rafael Santonio canceled my exhibitions in Europe just by word of the fact he heard I was going to be not doing the IFBB anymore next year.
Right.
Wayne was over here getting flack about me saying I was going to do this, and Lee called me about not going over. What am I doing? Think about this move. I'm like, how all of a sudden I become popular?
Yeah.
The thing I said was next year I'm probably going to do that organization. I'm finished with the IFBB. So I said, but that's something I said I was going to do. So I get to the Olympia. I'm looking good. I mean, let me tell you, man. I'll tell you right now. People were in my locker room. taking pictures like, you see Vince Taylor? That's top five material. I'm not going to tell you going to win, but that boy's top five for sure.
You're 50 years old.
50 years old. And I had the buzz going so strong back then. That was beautiful, right? And I'm sitting there, and then we got on that lineup. We came out lined up. I'm standing beside Sean. I'll never forget it. And they went around the lineup. They were calling out everybody, comparison, comparison, comparison. And they went through the tops. Then they went through some more. Then they start going back down the lineup. So you know, like, wait a minute. You didn't even call me out. So Sean's like, man, hang in there, kid. Hang in there. I said, oh, man, they're going to F me today. Wow. So they gave me 11th. We was at the Mandalay taking some pictures. And I recall, what's his name? Judy Bergman's husband, friend, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Judges, they came over and said, Vince, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your behind, but who did you piss off? We had you for fifth. We had you in fifth. I'm not saying you should have won. Don't right. get me wrong. You didn't have that in you. But you had top five in you. And why? We couldn't get a call out. I said, so I had the guy who ran Pinnacle standing there, Steve Stern. He came over. He said, what's going on? I said, listen to him. He said, I don't know what the problem is. I don't know who he pissed off. But he couldn't. We had him tagged for fifth. I don't know how he got 11th. So I said, that's how they play, Steve. So we left that alone. Then another friend of mine from Holland, Belgium, judge came up to me later. He said, man, we tried to call you out four times, and each time they denied our call out for you.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, so I make my comeback, and this is what's happening. I don't get no call outs. I get 11th. Just gave me 11th. You know, so I was like, all right, I'm cool. So what do you want to do now? You want to stay in there for this, or you want to get out? And that's when I just said, you know what? That's not going to change. But I can use this being back in shape and being on the Olympia at 50 for some other reasons. Just use the platform and do that. And then the following year, did some sit-ups, getting ready for the Olympia again. Went to Australia again, qualified again. Knowing I should have beat Dexter, he came over there, soft. And he was worried. I got third again. Ronnie Rock Howell was second. Ain't no way in the world Ronnie could touch me.
Yeah.
I'm like, this it just never stops. So let's go back to the Olympia. And after that, man, I took some time off and got ready to train again this by Easter. So I was getting ready. I was doing some sit-ups, man. I hurt my lower back. Got a pinch in my lower back. Mm-hmm. Done. Killed my career.
Yeah.
That was it. It for me.
Yeah.
But I did go to Olympia that year just to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Looked like garbage.
How old were you that year, Vince?
That's 51.
51? Okay.
Yeah, that's the following year, 51.
Well, I got to ask you what you're doing now because you look phenomenal when you're on stage Saturday night. I mean, your arms, you still got the guns. You still got the calves.
I tell you, you know, I'm going to credit all that to this right here. My new training system, Powerball 50 Smart Grips.
Okay.
It's a training system that I designed. It's a lightweight cable resistance workout. I train with a different understanding of moving weights. I'm training with a philosophy of contracting the muscle first. I created some training handles, which I call power balls, you know, and this actually creates – it's a isolation tool, you know, that allows you to affect muscle contraction and training by training with the ball – the power balls I call them, which is – I got one right here. You know, you train between your fingers with them, you know, and the whole principle and the concept in my training manual I've been working on for years, you train a certain way. You know, you deliver curling actions a certain way. Which represents you throwing a punch. You know, my whole system and principle is called joint rotation and recoil. You know, so you kind of push it out and you pull it back. So when you're training, but you train on multiple angles and you're only going to use the power balls, which are one or two, you know, the place between the finger folds, gives you an entirely new grip. And that's what I've become to know, that when I had the injury with my bicep rupture, the doctor told me to do cables. Take the resistance off of that tendon, that joint. Do rotation movements. That was way back then. When I tore my tricep tendon, trying to paint on the roof and got off the roof and the ladder slipped and I'm falling, scratching the roof and falling on my butt.
Oh, wow.
Tricep. I think that might have been the time I missed the Olympics, one of the Olympics. But, you know, I was rehabbing my tricep. I'm in the gym doing my conventional rehab motions, as you call them. Took my cable machine, took the handle off the cable machine, just used the wire like I've done many a times. And for some reason, I put my fingers between that stop ball at the end, and I was talking to somebody, and I was doing tricep extensions like that. And as soon as I could feel it isolate the outer head. And wow. So what would happen if I put the ball between the two middle fingers? So I did that same motion right there. You could feel the resistance shift to the rear delt, real tricep.
Mm-hmm.
okay, so what happens with the pinky? When I put it between the pinky finger, the tendon that I ruptured right here gets affected from this pinky finger when you do that motion.
Wow.
It's, oh, my gosh. I can actually affect this tendon by doing the finger fold. So I started doing that, and this created a whole new training concept for me because at the same token, I turn my hand over and I do bicep curls. Exact same thing happens. You start curling with the ball between the first two fingers with a loose wrist and, of course, that rotation motion, and you curl up. What you're doing is I'm contracting the bicep first, and I pull the resistance through the contraction like that. So that's basically the way you're curling, like this, out at multiple levels. I call it the 12 o'clock position, the 3, and the 6. Hmm. So I'm pulling down, and I'm curling up. It's working the lower portion of the bicep. I curl straight ahead. This motion is working the middle portion of my bicep. Hmm. I go up top, it works the peak action of the bicep.
Oh, okay.
So you feel the different resistance levels that you're training by putting the ball between the different fingers again. So that became my isolation curl, rotation curl. So from the concept of lightweight resistance, cable machines only, and or exercise bands, you get the opportunity to almost feel that you're dissecting the muscle. Okay.
Yeah.
What I found out was when you grip like this, you create the resistance in your forearm flexors. Every time you lift, the majority of your lift is in the forearms. Any exercise you do is going to start in the forearm power. What happens is the secondary motions of lifting, now you need that weight to pull that resistance, get muscle contraction, because you got to bypass the strength load here. If you take the forearms out of any exercise by opening that palm, now the forearms are engaged. Now you're hitting direct muscle that you're trying to train. Hmm. Your back. No grip here. You start pulling in the power ball grip. It's like a curling action or scratching action like that. And you pull back. That's all your back engaged now.
Hmm.
No intermediate forearm work. So the weight that you're using in my training philosophy goes from normal 25, 30-pound dumbbells to 5, 7, 10 pounds.
Hmm.
Because the muscle's already contracted. I'm pulling the resistance through the contraction process, and it's instantly you get a different stimulation in that in any muscle.
Hmm.
So the
so
same
when you grab it, you're putting the ball through your fingers. You're not grabbing it with your hand.
Exactly, finger
okay.
fold.
Okay,
you keep an open wrist, open palm. In fact, I have my power balls. And this is a version of my power balls right here. You know, in fact, this is the new version. You know, and you hold them like that. That's
okay.
the power ball grip. And you hold them between the finger folds.
Okay.
There's a single version that you train with it like that. That's my concept version to understand the dynamics and what you're actually doing. And when you want to add more strength, weights to or resistance, then you use a two-ball version.
Okay.
From now on, training is open palm.
Hmm.
It's never a closed grip because I'm eliminating forearm flexor activity. It was so interesting that I had taken the same concept to the University of Miami. And I was talking to the sports kinesiology and research, sports medicine research rather. And I showed the professor what I was doing, and he's involved in also contraction, isolation movements, and all that. And when I told him what I was doing, he volunteered to do a study for it right away.
Hmm.
So I just got a completed study on the power balls that's going to be published probably the next month.
Okay.
On is I train them with the triceps versus the normal hand grip, training the triceps, flying colors.
Hmm.
Flying colors. So now I'm going to go back and do the same thing with the biceps and some more testing purposes just to show that this is far beyond something to utilize for training. I have to make you think.
Yeah.
You want to know why your muscles are contracting like that, understand what happens when you start doing rotations, pronating and supinating and pronating their arm, how that affects resistance levels in the muscle. And that small knowledge changes everything you do about training.
Hmm.
So what I'm finding out is that me training like that maybe two or three times a week, I've been trying to get back to the gym for less. So I just tried about a month ago, 2 days, and I'm done. So now I'm back maybe once a week. But I'm only doing my power ball training, which is connecting these to the cable machine. I'm doing my entire upper body with these, utilizing some of the weights and dumbbells, you know, just periodically to keep the foundation. But the invention of these power balls and the training system I'm doing, lightweight cable resistance, it's affecting muscles to respond much more than heavy weight. So there's something to lightening up that load. Maybe it's my age. Maybe it's my muscles used to now being trained a different way, different resistance. But it's working. So when people ask me, Vince, what are you doing? I train two, maybe three times a week with power balls and cables, and that's it.
Wow.
And you look like that? Yeah, that's what's happening. So I'm launching this business hopefully in about 2 more months.
Is there a website, Vince?
I had one up, but I had taken it down because I was making my power balls myself, and then I got orders I couldn't fulfill. So it's like, take the website down until you're ready to get your manufacturing together, which I'm working on now.
Okay.
And hopefully, but online, if you Google Vince Taylor, Powerball 50s, there's a lot of information out there already.
Okay.
A lot of information, but not a lot, because I don't want everybody to know the concept.
Yeah.
And I just had a friend of mine I wanted to work with in Germany to actually take care of the distribution in Germany once we got rolling. Well, this clown stole my idea, and he started making something called Easy Balls right now.
Oh, really?
So I'm into copyright infringement is right. What I'm looking for right now. So that's today. I'm ready. I'm making that battle happen today.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't have everything out there. These clowns came out and did my prototype ball. Okay, this is just my prototype that I'm utilizing. The study and everything came down to my new version ball right here. So, you know, let them run with it. Let them enjoy what they're thinking they're doing. But the new Powerball, man, something to dream about.
Right.
And these things are for every sport.
Hmm.
You know, baseball players, football players, to create the hand grips that they need to strengthen to play the sport that they're in.
Right.
I got different sizes of these to represent you holding a tennis racket.
Hmm.
Okay. So I think world, man.
Wow.
But that's why the training access is a full body workout that could be used as a rehab workout or as effective as a world-class athlete workout, because you're doing motions and controlling activities by understanding what you're doing with the biceps or any muscle utilizing power balls.
Right.
So that's my baby, man. Vince Taylor, Powerball 50 training system.
Right.
That's what I'm doing now.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that, Vince. It's working on your physique, man.
I'm telling you, man. Shockingly.
Right. Well, Vince, I want to thank you for joining us at the Bodybuilding Legend Show. You had some really great stories, and you had a great career. And I'm glad we finally got a chance to sit down and talk with you about all your experiences. Definitely one of the best bodybuilders in the history of the sport, I'll say that. And one of the greatest bodybuilders, of course, of the 80s and 90s. So we really enjoyed your stories, Vince.
I enjoyed it 100%. You know, I had a great run. We sealed off the weekend with the Eagle.
Yeah.
You know, it landed. And, hey, this is it, man. This is what it's all about.
Right.
We got there. So thanks. I appreciate it. Hope you can use this stuff, man. It's a good conversation, and anytime, come back.
All right. Thank you, Vince. I appreciate it, buddy. Take care.
Peace.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And then thanks to everyone from the Patreon account who helps contribute to the show. I really appreciate you guys. And now, without further ado, we are going to talk about this, or I'm going to read this article from the March 1978 issue of Iron Man magazine, and it was written by Frank Zane. It's called Preparing for My Mr. Olympia Win, and this was, of course, right after Frank won his first Mr. Olympia in 1977, and it'll give you some good insight into the training and nutrition he followed. So it begins... I feel this story really begins in 1975 when I competed and came in fourth in the Mr. Olympia in Pretoria, South Africa. That year, I learned the meaning of timing because I reached a peak on Wednesday, 4 days after the competition was over. I'd been using Rio Blair supplements for 7 years, and I'd been following Rio's full program for 1 month before the contest, but I could have used its beneficial effects longer. His milk and egg protein tastes so good that it's hard not to take a lot. One of the mistakes I made was to continue using the protein right up to 1 week before the contest, where I should have stopped several weeks earlier. Milk products are great size builders in my case, but I have to leave them alone a month before the show for maximum muscularity. I was embarrassed about not being in top shape for this event, and I immediately resolved to be in top shape the following year, and I was, narrowly missing victory by only 1 point. Again, I used Blair supplements, but I didn't make the same mistakes I did the previous year, and I stopped using the protein the last month while continuing to take his other supplements in large amounts, 50 to 100 amino acids and liver extract daily. I feel the key to reaching bodybuilding potential is through super nutrition, because the health gets better. Super physique should be super healthy. Between 3-hour daily workouts, a high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet, and lots of mega vitamins and mega mineral supplementation, I got extremely muscular with a good amount of size. My back, delts, and calves had especially improved, and I had gotten into the habit of keeping a complete written record of exercises, poundages, sets and reps, foods eaten, and supplements and amounts taken. I figured it would help me and others in future years.
I didn't make the decision to compete again until January 1977, when I publicly declared 1977 is the year of Zane. I think this positive attitude did more than anything else to help me win the title. I trained as if I had already won, and my body responded as my mind commanded it to. I ceased teaching school in mid-June, and I devoted almost full time to my training. In July and August, I spent weekends starring in my first film, Sagan, a science fiction adventure movie. Nevertheless, I trained with heavy weights 5 days a week. I had trained like this in 1972, and now the effect was the same as before. I gained muscle size. I ate a lot of meat, eggs, and a new protein Rio Blair developed, having no carbohydrates. My body weight slowly went up to a hard 200. I finished filming 5 weeks before the Olympia, and I began training in earnest twice a day, 2 hours each workout, 6 days a week. I was very tired at first, but after a week or so, I got used to the soreness and I began to push even harder. I had a photo session every weekend with my wife, Christine, and I got a good idea of how I was progressing. I found I had to drop the no carbohydrate protein the last 2 weeks, and I reduced a huge amount of supplements to very generous amounts, and I still made great gains. Instead, I ate more meats, mostly lamb, chicken, turkey, duck, pork, fish, and some beef and liver. Christine cooked large roast and other meats and made me eat practically all day long. Her delicious cooking and recipes helped me develop a good appetite, and as my muscles continue to grow, I anxiously look forward to my next meal, my next workout, and victory. The last week before leaving for Columbus, Ohio, where Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Lorimer ran the greatest Mr. Olympia ever held, I spent hours practicing my posing, sunbathing, and training. My last workout was Wednesday, and by then, I really felt a little tired and overtrained. I rested Thursday and I left Friday morning after getting as much sun as possible on Thursday. I stayed on my diet right up until Saturday morning, and then I began to eat small amounts of protein, carbohydrates, and oils right up to prejudging. Backstage, while the other contestants ran about nervously pumping up, I relaxed on a sofa and I emptied my mind of thoughts. And then 5 minutes before we were to be out on stage, I did 30 push-ups, oiled up, drew number one, and walked out first on stage. The rest is history. I would like to thank all the people who helped me. Christine, who was around me, encouraged me, fed me, photographed me, and assisted in ways too numerous to mention. Arnold Schwarzenegger, who produced a fantastic, totally sold-out contest and gave me an honest appraisal of the kind of shape I was in before the contest. Rio Blair, who I consider to be the world's most knowledgeable nutritionist, for his nutritional advice and fine food supplements. Joe Weider for the posing photo session we had a few days before the Mr. Olympia, where he helped me become more conscious of the fine details of posing. Joe Gold for opening the World Gym in Santa Monica, May 1977, the finest gym anywhere. My mother for making me the world's finest posing trunks. The top three contestants in the Mr. Olympia wore Zane trunks. Thanks to all these people and to my own strong intention, I am Mr. Olympia. I'd also like to thank Zane fans everywhere, especially those who wrote me letters of encouragement and those who attended the contest. If it weren't for your loyal support through the years, I might have given up long ago. I don't intend to let the crown go dormant. I am giving posing exhibitions and bodybuilding seminars everywhere this year, and I intend to be up there winning the Mr. Olympia in Columbus, Ohio again next year. All right, that was awesome. And then there's another article here, which I'll probably read maybe next week, and it's about a Zane seminar that took place early in 1977. I think it was in Canada, and it was written by Dennis B. Weiss, who was a big contributor to Iron Man. He wrote a lot of articles for them, and that was really interesting. It's a kind of a question and answer article. Next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, I'll read that one for you guys. All right, so that's it. Hope everybody has a great week. I will be going to the Tampa Pro this weekend, so I'll give you a full report of that next week, and then we will have part one of our second year anniversary right here at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So thanks to all of you who listen to the show. Thanks for all your support. If you can and you want to email me, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com or leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. I'd really appreciate that. Okay, everybody. Take care. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.